You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hey there, welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy, and I'm so glad to be back here with you. If you've been a listener to this podcast, you may have noticed it's been a little quiet in this space of holding space. I took most of the year off the podcast, actually, because last summer I got a book deal and that was so exciting, but something in my life had to give in order to make space for the process of writing a book. And it's coming out fall of 2026, so we still got some time. But I just recently handed over my full first draft of my manuscript to my editor. That felt amazing. And I am so excited about everything that came out of me and came into this book. It's a little bit about it. It's a book for cycle-breaking parents who want to raise emotionally resilient kids without burning themselves out in the process. So it's talking about reactivity, emotional inheritance, breaking generational cycles, nervous system regulation, building margins. If you know me, I mean, my podcast is literally called Holding Space. I'm obsessed with finding ways to have more space, to build out margins, to protect margins as a parent, because we need them to actually live our values instead of parenting from survival mode. I think margins are the secret sauce, like a margin between a trigger and a response, a margin for mistakes, margins for yourself and for those that you love, protecting space. I am obsessed. So all this is in the book, and I'll be sharing more about the book soon, but for now, I'm just really excited to be back behind the mic and in conversation in these ways. I've got a few solo episodes lined up coming your way, some deep dives into the themes that I've been living and breathing while writing. So we'll be talking about everything from the mental load to burnout to overstimulation and maternal rage to boundaries. Perimenopause. I'm like in a deep dive right now and learning more about perimenopause because I was so shook by postpartum, and I know so many of you were, just felt so unsupported and unprepared. And we're not going to do that again with menopause and perimenopause, right? Like, we learn and now we're going to do things differently. We're going to educate ourselves. We're going to find providers that won't gaslight us. We are not going to white knuckle through, because if we live long enough, we're all going to go through it. And so I'm doing the deep dives now, getting a lot of training so that I can support us as we age together. So I'll do a solo episode on what I'm learning and just overall episodes to support you finding space again in your own life. And today's episode, it's a big one. So before we get into anything today, though, can we just take a breath together? I know, but like really, let's drop into our bodies before we absorb all the things we'll be talking about today. And here, I'm going to give you a little bit of direction. So we're going to do an inhale, and then can we practice doing an extended exhale? And we're going to make a shushing sound on the exhale. And there's actually a science behind this of why that can actually really help us drop into our bodies a little bit and turn down that stress response. So let's give that a try. So let's go ahead and take an inhale with me. And then we're going to extend that exhale. My shoulders immediately dropped. Let's try that one more time. Let's do an inhale. exhale. We'll get to a place where we talk more about what that shushing sound does, but it really does kind of elevate this kind of prompt of like, take a deep breath or take a breath to take a beat, right? It really elevates the experience of it. And maybe you weren't in a place where you can make that shushing sound and feel comfortable. So try that later if you didn't get to. And bonus, if you've got a baby that you're rocking on your hip right now or at any point, they love shushing sounds. It's like white noise to them. So you're regulating yourself, you're regulating them. It's co-regulation in motion. We love it. Today's episode is for anyone who has ever found themselves snapping before they even realize what's happening. So reactivity. Maybe you found yourself crying over something that you quote unquote should be able to handle or feeling like everything is just too much. It's for the person who thought, I'm fine one minute, and then suddenly you're not. Or for the person who said something they wish they could take back or who wondered, maybe today even, what is wrong with me? Why am I so reactive? So if you have found yourself asking yourself this question, you are in the right place. And not because I'm perfect, definitely not. I am passionate about the things that I live. Why do you think I always like to talk about maternal rage? It's because I can get a little ragey myself. And so I'm human, fully, full stop, human being here. Also a therapist who's in conversation with clients and moms and parents every single day talking about these things. And I've got some education in this area, and I am also living it alongside with you. I've been there. I literally am there, and I want to walk through it with you today. So let's define it first. Reactivity. So reactivity is what happens when our response is bigger or sharper than the moment calls for. It's the part of us that often bypasses our thoughtful self and is driven by a part of us that feels overwhelmed or unsafe often. Sometimes that shows up as yelling. Sometimes it's shutting down. Sometimes it's withdrawing. Sometimes it shows up as anxiety. Sometimes it's when we burst into tears. It's not a reflection of your worth. Nope. It's actually a reflection of your nervous system. So today we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about reactivity, yes, but also underneath that, we're going to talk about your nervous system, your history, your cycles, your hormones, and also we're going to get to a place of talking also about hope, okay? Because you're not crazy, you're not failing, you're wired to protect yourself and those you love. And sometimes that wiring, that part of us gets loud or takes on these really extreme roles. So let's zoom out. Here are the five areas that we're going to be talking about today that often contribute to reactivity. Emotions, and we'll talk about emotions as messengers. Your nervous system and past triggers, so generational stuff, a lack of support, overstimulation or just sensory overload. And we're talking about hormonal shifts and our cycles too a little bit today. So we're going to unpack each of these together. And then with each, I will share a tangible step or support you can walk away with. All right, let's start with talking about emotions and feelings. Because a lot of times with the reactivity, what it tends to feel like is a feeling, right? A swirl of emotion that just like, oof, comes out. And it comes out sharp and it comes out quick. So as a human being, you and I are wired for emotion. It's little messengers to provide us data about what's happening in the world around us. We're wired for anger. We're wired for sadness and joy. We're also wired for fear. Turns on that stress response, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, flock. We'll talk more about those in a bit. And anxiety. Fear's friend, looking for all the potential threats, which turns on that same system. So you could be safe at home and still have that like revved up stress response, right? And so we're all wired for emotions. They're not defects. They're not failures of self-control or signs you're doing it wrong. They're messengers. They carry important information about what we need, what we value, what feels threatened, and what wants to be seen. But it doesn't always get it right, right? So like I could feel like I'm wired for guilt. It's that part that pops up and says, oh, you're doing this thing that's not in alignment with your values. I could literally just be taking a margin of rest for myself so that I can show up better as a parent. And guilt's like, oh, but you're not being present with the kids. And I can be like, thank you, guilt. Thank you so much for that message. Yes, I do value being present and patient with the kids. And actually, this margin I'm taking for myself is going to allow me to do that. And so it doesn't always get it right. And in a culture that often tells us to push past our feelings, especially as parents, it's easy to override those internal cues. So we numb them, we suppress them, we shame ourselves for having them at all. And then they build and they build and they build. And it's like being in a car and these parts of you are in the back seat and they're like, dude, she's not listening because you're just, you know, turning up the music or you're trying to white knuckle through or you've got the blinders on or you're just trying to like pedal the metal, like move through it, move past it. And they're like, she's not listening. And they get louder and louder and louder until they're screaming, until they're jumping in the driver's seat and like pushing you over. And now you're driven by your emotion. You're getting a little reactive, okay? So let's reframe what some of the most common emotions might be trying to tell us. So anger, right? That's probably a common one when it comes to feeling reactive, might be saying something feels unfair or a boundary has been crossed. Now, it doesn't show up that way, right? It's that part that gives us this oomph, and then now we're yelling or we're raging or we're slamming doors. Sadness could be asking, what have I lost? What am I missing or grieving? But maybe it doesn't always show up that way. Maybe sometimes in a reactive way, sadness shows up and leaves us feeling like we want to withdraw or leads us to wanting to shut down. Anxiety might be alerting us. Something feels uncertain or I don't feel equipped to handle this. But maybe instead, when those parts show up in a reactive way, it leads us to maybe go to Google and start like doom searching. Anxiety is also sometimes the part that shows up and like wants to control everything that's happening around us, right? And so we start getting really reactive about the things that are happening around us or on our environment or how people are behaving or acting. Numbness. Okay, that can oftentimes signal I'm maxed out. I've had to feel too much for too long without space to process. And that can, you know, lead to maybe us opening up our phones and the finger hovers over to that app that, you know, helps us kind of numb out, right? We start scrolling and again, taking in more information or other people's highlight reels. And now we just feel shittier about ourselves. When really what we just needed was a margin for our brain to not take in more, a space for our nervous system to recalibrate, but that's not what we gave ourselves, right? So we don't need to quote unquote fix these feelings, but we do need to listen to them and, right, respond to them in a way that has compassion, but also is boundaried, right? I'm not gonna let these parts of me jump in the driver's seat. But first, just like a child does, like these parts of us need to feel seen and heard. I need to meet that part of me and be like, oh, okay, I'm noticing that I'm feeling anxious. I'm going to name it. Hey, anxious part. Hey, guilt part. Hey, angry part. I hear you. I hear the message that you're giving me about what's happening around me. I'm not going to let you jump in the driver's seat, but I'm just going to first acknowledge, just like with a child, once they feel seen and validated, they don't have to get bigger and louder with the feelings. Like, I'm gonna maybe have boundaries. I'm not gonna let you hit me, little one, but I am gonna validate that I see you. Like, you feel so upset right now. You feel so scared, overwhelmed, nervous, frustrated. I'm gonna validate it and I'm gonna have a boundary around it too. Same thing I do with my feelings. And so here's a takeaway. Here's a try this. Next time you feel a big emotion swelling, before you react or rush to suppress it, what if you pause and ask yourself, what is this feeling trying to show me? What might it need from me right now? That simple check-in, just naming the emotion, giving it a moment of your attention, can soften its intensity. Even saying to yourself, this is anger, or this is grief. It activates the thinking part of your brain and helps you create just enough space, space between that trigger and that reactivity to respond rather than react. Naming is a form of witnessing, and when we witness our emotions, they often no longer need to scream. Okay, let's take a closer look at the nervous system, which is your internal alarm system, okay? Once we start tuning into our emotions as these messengers, we can often realize that they aren't just floating around randomly. They're deeply connected to the state of our nervous system. In fact, most of our emotional responses, and especially when it comes to reactivity, are shaped by whether or not our body feels safe. So your nervous system is like your internal surveillance system. All day long, without even thinking about it, it's scanning, right? Am I safe? Am I supported? Am I alone? Am I being asked to handle too much? And here's the thing, it doesn't just respond to actual danger, it also responds to perceived danger, right? That's the difference between fear and anxiety. So that moment when your toddler starts screaming, or your partner walks in and makes a comment, your teen rolls their eyes at you, or just the dishes are piled and smelling and no one is helping, and your nervous system might interpret all of that as a threat. And like, not the kind of threat that puts you in physical danger, but the kind that overwhelms your sense of capacity, your control, your worth even. So when your body senses that kind of overwhelm, it reacts by shifting into survival mode. And that might look like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, and flock. So fight is, I think, kind of, you get that, right? You get snappy, loud, irritable. You're like ready to fight off the threat. You're trying to take control. Flight is, you know, if you were out in the savannah and there was a predator, a lion, and you were like saying, I can't fight this off, then you might flee. You might try to run away. So, but this, what this can look like for us is also in our everyday life is like just disconnecting. So maybe you're fleeing by diving into your phone or just getting really busy or that urge to escape, that like buzzy bee feeling, you know? Or there's freeze. Sometimes when, you know, an animal has a predator that's stalking it, maybe it has this response where it just freezes. Maybe if I just freeze, the predator won't see me or notice me. But for us, this might look like going kind of numb or shutting down, where everything feels like too much to move through. And then there's fawn and flock stress responses, which maybe you've heard of, maybe you haven't. So in nature, animals don't only respond to threat by running, freezing, or fighting. Sometimes they submit or appease a threat to increase their chances of survival. That's fawning. Other times they might move toward the group, toward closeness, co-regulation, safety in numbers. That's flocking. And so both of these are rooted in a mammal's biological drive to survive through connection. And in humans, this can show up too. So in humans, a fawn response can often show up as people-pleasing, over-apologizing, shape-shifting to keep others calm. It's when we put our own needs aside in hopes of preserving connection or avoiding conflict. So in parenting, fawn could sound like, it's fine, don't worry about me, or I'll just handle it, it's easier that way, or I know I'm probably overreacting. So like, and saying yes is something that's actually a no for you, just to avoid someone else's discomfort. This can develop early, especially if you grew up in a home where your emotional needs were minimized or where keeping the peace kept you safe. And then there's the flock response. It's a little different. It's not so much about appeasement, but about seeking proximity. It's that instinct to call a friend or huddle up with your child after a tantrum or to crave closeness with someone who makes you feel safe. But it can also, in our, you know, modern digitized day and age, can be the reason that you go to social media when you're feeling shitty about yourself. And what we're trying to flock towards is connection, safety, feeling seen. But sometimes in that space we can, for sure. But sometimes in that space we definitely don't. And so understanding these different stress responses are really helpful because I think they're actually quite common, especially for moms, especially in modern day life. And let me just reiterate that these are not flaws in your personality. They're strategies, your body's way of protecting you when things feel unsafe or overwhelming. And they were often formed a long time ago, right? Like what your default is. What's the familiar path when you feel stressed? Your brain, your body are just trying to keep you safe. So it's gonna be like, what's the most familiar path of how we handle these sort of situations? And it'll quickly go there. And that's how we find ourselves being reactive, because it's quick. It is, it's familiar. And your brain's just like, that. This is the default. So you'd go there quickly. And they were formed long ago. So maybe your fight response developed when you had to advocate for yourself in a home where no one listened. Or maybe your freeze response shows up because big feelings weren't safe in your family. Or maybe your fawn instinct helped you survive unpredictable adult behavior around you. These aren't random reactions. They're just old strategies still running. So here's your try this for this section, okay? When you feel that shift, that heat rising in your chest, that impulse to yell, shut down, scroll, or fix, I want you to pause and just ask yourself this question. What state am I in right now? And again, we're just naming it here. And that beat of naming something is creating a margin space between the trigger and response again. Sometimes it's just naming the state and that loosens the grip. Oh, this is my fight response. This is my freeze, fawn, flock response. And then just try maybe one of these small regulating tools to help signal safety back into your system. So maybe you place a hand on your chest or over your heart and just take that breath. Maybe you extend that exhale. Maybe you name a few things around yourself that you can see or hear just to slow your roll a bit and like tune into your senses. Maybe you ask for a beat. Maybe you say like to your child, hey, you know, with your hand on your heart, maybe you take that breath. When I do that breath now, my kids actually know, oh, mom just caught herself, that like shushing exhale. I'm going to just take a moment. I need to calm my body down before I can come and be here with you. Okay. Sometimes I rock gently side to side. That's kind of soothing to me too. These are just like small practices that create a margin where that reaction can soften just enough to make a different choice or come back later to repair. Because reactivity isn't just about like losing control, right? It's your nervous system trying to keep you safe in a world and a home that sometimes like isn't so cushy, right? And isn't always going to meet all of your needs or be so calming from a sensory perspective. And so sometimes we just have to notice that and name it and reclaim a little bit of that regulation for ourselves and our bodies. And just a quick note on that flock response, right? Like just noticing that you, in these moments, your finger tends to hover onto your phone and then to certain apps that maybe you don't leave feeling the most regulated from. Maybe instead with flock, if you name it, right? Like that desire, maybe you text a friend. Maybe you picture someone who helps you feel calm or seen, someone who's still in your life, maybe someone who has passed. Maybe you sit next to your kid and you don't need to say any words, but you just are with them. Maybe you ask your partner for a hug and let it linger a bit. These are other options for that flock response instead of flocking to Instagram or other social media apps. Hey there, if you are a California, Nevada, or New York-based parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me. I will follow up with you and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you.
Unlock big savings while adding style and security to your home with Schlage door locks from Menards. High-quality Schlage Wi-Fi compatible entry locks allow you to lock and unlock your home from anywhere with your phone. Get peace of mind and save big money on all door locks at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Speaking of asking for a hug, reaching out for our support system, let's talk about the lack of support. So we've talked about emotions, nervous systems, what's happening inside of us, but reactivity doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? It happens in context with what's happening also around us. And oftentimes we're carrying a lot. And I know because of all the conversations I have daily with clients, a lot of folks are carrying a lot alone. And so much of this reactivity we judge ourselves for is happening against a backdrop of invisible labor, emotional, logistical, relational, that no one else sees, but we see and we feel every single day. Because you're not just managing your child's schedule, you're thinking about how they're sleeping, if they're connecting at school, how to keep the pantry stocked, what tone your partner walked in with, what does that mean? You're thinking three steps ahead while answering all the questions before it's even 8 a.m., right? Like, and you're layering that with the pressure to stay calm or be grateful. It becomes a perfect storm for shutdown or like just erupting. So reactivity doesn't just come from what's happening. It comes from what's unmet, especially when your needs have gone unseen for too long. So there's so much more to say about this, and I've got a ton of episodes where we're diving into more of the logistics of all this and the relational aspects of this. But here's your takeaway, try this for today. I want you to do a mental load audit. Set a timer for 5 minutes, and I want you to write out everything you're holding right now. Maybe this, if you're somebody who's like, I don't like to write, maybe this is, you know, you pull out like your app on your phone and you use the notes app, and maybe you just speak it out and let it write it out for you. Write out everything you're holding right now: decisions, worries, responsibilities, the emotional temperature of your home, and then take a look at it and ask yourself, which of these balls that I'm carrying are plastic and I can let them drop? Which ones are glass and I don't want to drop them, but I can pass to someone else? What can be shared? What can be postponed? What can be simply named and honored? What is something now that I've got it written down and I've got it all right here, I can verbalize this to a support person that this is something that I'm really carrying and I would like to pass it to them, let it go, let them have it. Oof, that's a hard one too. I need to do a podcast episode just about that, the letting things go and then letting them handle it and then they don't do it how you would have done it. But for now, let's just take the mental load audit, okay, and explore which of these are glass, which of these are plastic balls that you're carrying or juggling, you can let them drop. Sometimes the act of naming what we carry is the first step in redistributing it. And I know that that's a load too. It's like, why do I have to be the one to figure this out, to make this list? I know. I know, I know, I know. And this is just first a practice and exercise of you seeing it all laid out and recognizing like, oh shit, that's a lot, right? And that just within yourself, are there things here that you can pass or that you can pause or that you can let the ball drop on these things? If you're partnered, co-parenting, we're going to also get to some episodes to talk more about that. And I'll share some in the show notes about with episodes I've already done where we've talked about this. So hopefully that you can get some more support. And this sometimes is an area where it's like, okay, just more support is needed more than just a podcast episode. It needs to be really nuanced to what you and your family system, you and your partner are navigating, struggling with, and therapy can be really supportive in those areas as well. Okay, let's shift now into another often overlooked contributor to reactivity, sensory overwhelm. Most of us, I think, underestimate how much noise, touch, visual clutter, constant demands, smells affect our nervous system until we're already snapping. So if you're someone who feels like you're fine until you're suddenly not, there's a good chance that your system is hitting sensory capacity long before your brain catches on. Modern parenting is full of sensory input. The sound of your kids bickering, the devices beeping, there's things spilling, there's small bodies climbing on you, there's sand on the floor, questions coming from every direction, all while you're trying to get food on the table because everybody's asking for snacks. And because we're told that good parents should be quote unquote, always available, right? We're in this era of intensive parenting where we are trying to be a lot more involved than maybe what was modeled for us. And not just like there and involved, but like trying to be our kids' therapists and speech therapists and nutritionists and educator and all holding all the things, with the pressure to be involved in all these areas without feeling like there's enough space and margins for us to recalibrate. Many of us override our signals. We absorb more than our body can process. And then we feel ashamed when we reach our edge. But like, of course we did, right? So here's the truth. Reactivity in these moments isn't about being impatient. It's about your body saying no to more input loudly because, you know, the little whispers of like, I need space here. I need some of this to slow down here weren't being heard. So here's your try this for sensory overload. Try building in a 2 to 5 minute sensory reset a couple times a day. These are not luxuries, they're necessary margin. So here's a few options of what this can look like. Putting in earplugs or putting on noise-canceling headphones for a moment of quiet. This is something that my husband does, and at first I really resented him for it, I'll be honest. But we learned through our kids getting assessed and finding out that they had sensory processing challenges. I looked at my husband during this, and I was like, when we were learning about it, I'm like, this is literally you. And he's like, yeah. Now I understand that more. And what my ask of him is that he lets me know when he's putting them on and that then he also takes them off at certain parts of the day after he's gotten that reset and that I get similar resets and margins for myself. Maybe you are going to step outside, even if it's just to the porch or the front step, and take a few beats and a few breaths. Dim the lights. Close your eyes. Focus on one deep breath. I love sensory deprivation showers. Like, take a shower, and that's like necessary, right? We're not going to count this as like this beautiful self-care moment. It's a necessity. You deserve a lot more than a shower, but like, turn the lights off. Try that. See how that goes. I love taking showers with the lights off. And if you're with your kids, maybe it's just making it a quiet moment for everyone. So if you can't step away physically, which I know that happens sometimes, turning on a calming song, light a candle, right? Let them go on the screens. Yeah, for sure. I mean, turn the volume down so you don't have to hear that too. But like, I love using screens as a tool when I need a margin to reset because I will then come back and be a more patient, present parent for bedtime, you know? Your sensory system is part of your nervous system, so protecting it isn't selfish, it's also survival. And I really do believe that it's also like the foundation of staying in relationship, especially when the days get really loud. Okay, so we've covered a lot. We've talked about emotions, your nervous system, mental load, sensory overwhelm. But I think there's another layer that we need to talk more about. And it's often dismissed or misunderstood or reduced to a punchline sometimes. Your hormones, your cycle, your biology. For many of us, reactivity can ebb and flow in ways that don't seem logical. We might feel grounded one week and completely unravel the next. And when we don't have language or context for this and why, it's easy to fall into that like mental trap of like, what's wrong with me? And that can, you know, spiral into shame. So those shifts are not random though. Our menstrual cycles play a huge role in our emotional regulation. And if you're in your late 30s, 40s, I'm turning 40 this summer, perimenopause may also be reshaping how you experience mood, stress, sleep, focus, all the things, and sometimes dramatically. So just a little brief breakdown, all right? So throughout your cycle, we've got our follicular phase. This is the period like right after your period where you might feel more energy and clarity. We've got ovulation. This is where estrogen peaks and you may feel connected, outward facing, motivated. You know, you might be looking at your partner like, you look like a treat right now, you know? And then there's the luteal phase. This is when you might start to feel more sensitive, tired, reactive, estrogen and progesterone kind of dip there. And then there's those premenstrual days. This is where your nervous system is a little bit less buffered and more likely to tip into survival mode. I have this kind of like pre-bleed theory too, that, you know, our ancestors, they were about to bleed. And when you bleed and you are living in a cave surrounded by predators, that might be a risk, right? Bring in some threat. And so you get a little bit more on edge, a little bit more, you know, edgy and willing to drop into fight flight, right? Freeze, fawn flock, you know, might put you more in that fight mode. So that's just a theory. But this is important to pay attention to, because something small can start to feel massive. And that's not you just being dramatic. That's biology. And if you're in perimenopause, this transition, this can also bring unpredictable hormonal shifts. Your cycles may still come, but it's a little like wonky. Hormones can swing more wildly, and this can affect everything from anxiety to your temperature regulation to emotional steadiness. And so you might find yourself feeling rage that wasn't there before, or like that bone deep fatigue, insomnia, brain fog, and then just like with that, then not feeling like yourself. And that's scary. Just a sense of like disorientation in your own body. And again, this doesn't mean you're broken. It just means that you're shifting. But if you don't know what's happening, or you don't feel like you're getting support from your providers around this, that can be really tricky. And here's the thing is that, you know, hormone testing, it's not always reliable, I'm learning. And so they fluctuate day to day. And so, you know, really what we're looking here for is symptoms. Like your symptoms matter and your lived experience is data here. So one thing you can do here, and this is your try this in this area, is to track your symptoms, not just your cycle, but also along with your cycle, right? To understand more of what your cycle is looking like. If it's more regular, right, that can be helpful. And if it's starting to become more irregular, that's helpful data too to bring to your provider. So just noticing like when your patience feels thin, when sleep is feeling more disrupted, you know, are you getting closer to your period? And so if you start to feel more ragey or anxious or sad, noticing that and being able to have language for that. I tell my kids, hey, my breasts are starting to feel real tender. And usually that means a few things for me and my mood, and I just want to name it, right? And my kids have come to appreciate that, right? Do I get irritated when I haven't named it and they name it for me? Yes, but sometimes they're right. And I can get better and better at owning that and acknowledging that. And so then it's asking, what would support look like here? So that might mean shifting expectations, asking for backup, letting my body seek what it needs, rest maybe more so. And then maybe talking to a provider who takes perimenopause seriously, you know, because parenting inside a shifting body is a different experience and it requires different care. I have been reading the book, The New Menopause by Dr. Mary Claire Haver, And I know on her website, she's got a directory of providers that are really great when it comes to perimenopause care or just women's health. And so that might be a resource to take a look at too. And I will be sure to share that in the show notes. All right. So if you're still with me, thank you. I'm so glad you are. I know this was a lot, but that's kind of the point, right? Reactivity isn't just one isolated thing. It's the accumulation of so many invisible factors that we're navigating all at once. So let's recap the key contributors here that we explored. Emotions, messengers, not problems. Naming them helps you understand them. Your nervous system, it drives reactivity based on how safe or overwhelmed you feel. A lack of support makes everything harder to hold, and you were not meant to hold it all alone. Sensory overload, it taxes your system in ways that can really pile up quickly. And hormonal shifts, both cyclical and long-term, can reshape your capacity, and those deserve attention, not shame. You are not broken. You're full of stuff. You're human. You're doing a lot, maybe with very little margin of space. And when you begin to understand what's beneath the reactivity, emotionally, biologically, relationally, it's at that point that then we can start building compassion instead of self-criticism. So you can start making small shifts that create just enough space to pause, to repair, to soften, and to stay connected. So if you want to come back to any of these tools and you'd like to see this like written down and have it as something to kind of come back to and have all these tools, reflections, practices just there for you instead of just something that you listen to, I've written it all out for you over on Substack. So I am on Substack now. It's my space there is called A Little Space, Please. And if you've got a little space in your life, I would love for you to go check it out and connect with me over there. So this post connected to this episode is called Why Am I So Reactive? I'll share it in the show notes and you'll find every point from today's episode broken down clearly with some added prompts and support. And I hope that it gives you a moment to exhale, to name what's hard, and to feel less alone. So go check out that link in the show notes. And until next time, I'm holding space for you, always. So glad that you're here, and I hope that you found this supportive. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.